We've got a few more talks here that are going to be interesting to see. And one of this one that's coming right now is actually interesting for me because it's talking about real data and making decisions with it. As web developers, we always see a great talk with new technology, and then we're like, why don't all browsers have that? Why are you not supporting this feature that other browsers have? Why not doing this yet? And this is a talk about like how we're using data and research to find out how many of these features that we could put in the browser really make a difference to people, or if it's just something nice to have, and where the real gaps in browser support are, and how we made decisions what to support and what not to support. So without further ado, Greg, it's all in your field now.
Perfect, thank you. He ate up 20 seconds of my time, by the way. How's everybody doing? Doing good? Awesome, cool. So I'm always thrilled to come and speak at these events because I always love getting to meet you face-to-face, web developers and partners, to find out firsthand where you think we're doing good, where we're doing okay, and let's face it, where we flat-out suck. It's always good to find that information out. And Charles hit on it earlier, as well as Jacob, that we went on a wonderful journey working on Microsoft Edge, trying to focus solely on interoperability. And I think one of the best ways to show how these tool sets that we're releasing to the public can influence you is to kind of take you on a journey. A few years ago, prior to coming and working at Microsoft, I was a full-time web developer for over a decade, from small to medium-sized sites before transitioning for a short time to work within the enterprise. And I got this opportunity to come work on the browser in an informal call with a future colleague. I was very, very blunt about my experience and my perception of Microsoft's browsers. And his reply kind of shocked me and said, "Perfect. That's exactly what we're looking for." And so I was stoked to come and join this wonderful team. And right when I got there, I could sense there was a shift underway at Microsoft. And the browser world, it was no different. We finished up IE 11 and shipped that. And we began planning what would become Microsoft Edge. And with all of the capabilities that we removed, as Charles alluded to, it allowed us to think of it in a different way. And there became an internal mantra. And you may have even seen this on blog posts. And it's even painted on our walls, of the web just works for everyone. And in order to make that happen, we had to change our mindset. We had to change what information we were looking at. We could not solely focus on what we have, our differentials. We couldn't focus on what was in the specifications. Because unfortunately, as he showed the mobile web, a lot of that is proprietary. And the mobile web is built for WebKit-based browsers. And so we had to take into account the whole ecosystem, what web developers are actually doing, what they're building for. We had to continue to grow and strengthen our wonderful relationships with the other browser vendors to work out interop issues, potentially even, in our opinions, in some cases, take a less sane approach to implementations due to web developers depending on that capability, basically implementing their bugs. And so I'm excited to be able to have the opportunity to kind of peel back the curtain. Because if you're anything like me, I didn't spend a ton of time focused on what web browsers were doing. I just wanted to know when you had the feature that you had so that I could use it to make my life easier. And a lot of times I just envisioned people sitting in a room throwing darts at a dartboard. Because a lot of times it felt like the thing I wanted wasn't in a browser. Just by a show of hands here, does anybody have a feature they want to see in Microsoft Edge? Anybody? Well, I'd expect a lot more hands with web developers. But awesome, a few of you. And in all honesty, I didn't even really have to ask that question because I love Twitter, I love social media, and we get more than our fair share of feature requests. And I love it. I love getting that passion and that zeal and that desire. And that's why I was thrilled 2 years ago, you saw this earlier, when we released platform status. This gave a little bit more transparency of where we were going, where we were headed, when it got flipped into development, when that happened. If it's under consideration, is it a high, low, medium priority? But still, even with status, I still kind of see this. Why do you not have my feature? Why do you not have my feature, or is my bug not fixed? And ultimately, it comes down to those daggone decisions. So today, we're going to look quickly at how we determine those priorities. And if you look at priority as a mathematical equation, we're basically trying to solve for P. And there's a bunch of variables that go into that. Top sites and partners. Some of the top sites from around the world we meet with, as well as partners in sectors such as social media, gaming, In the enterprise, we ask them, what are your blockers? What are your users experiencing that is holding you back from using Microsoft Edge? Or what can we put into Microsoft Edge that would make your experience that much better? We showed user voice earlier. And the slide says user voice, but we also, as I said before, we take into account all community feedback, whether that be on Twitter or a Facebook post or Stack Overflow. We have a lot of engineers that work on Stack Overflow as well to answer questions. These all play into account and play a role in our prioritization. This is a massive bucket, but one that I think is very important, is standards and competitive analysis. So often, I get requests to implement something that is in a specification I know is dead. I also get requests to implement something that is in only one browser and can't be implemented, and it is in no specification. And a good example of the kind of research we have to do is CSS Grid. We came up with it and shipped it as far as back as IE10 and have had requests of when we were going to be updating it. And we have to take a lot of things into consideration, and one of those is, for example, we want to see other browsers' interest. We've now seen that, and thankfully with Igalia stepping forward and implementing it in Blink and soon to be WebKit, we now have a lot of the major browsers now supporting CSS Grid. Additionally, though, we want to see that specification stabilized. Coming from somebody that wonderfully works with a guy from Google named Phil Walton on a Flexbugs repo, we do not want that specification shifting all around, and neither do you, because you end up with a bunch of interop issues. So we also want to see that specification stabilized before we rev that version. In product telemetry and feedback, you saw Charles' talk this morning, we get a lot of information, very vital and very important, as well as right in the user interface, there's the capability for users that maybe don't know who to file a bug on or what to say, they can just tell us the problem. And that automatically goes into our bug database. So, and one thing to really point out is all of these other ones are kind of external. This is coming directly from our users. I know I'm in San Francisco, but did you guys know we have a search engine? Did you guys know that? All right, cool. In order to create a good search engine, all the wonderful stuff that they showed off for Cortana, it has to crawl the web a lot. And the great thing for us is we have a lot of questions. And so we get to go ask this crawler those questions to try to get answers to help, again, prioritize better. Today I want to focus on these two buckets. And again, I want us to be thinking about that transition from IE11 to Microsoft Edge when we talk about the new section that Charles alluded to earlier of data.microsoftedge.com. This is only our first wave. And when we started talking about this, I noticed a lot of times in CSS working group meetings that we would go do investigations and we would share this information publicly. And all of a sudden, it kind of dawned on us, it's like, why do we keep this internal? We end up sharing in blogs or in tweets, we might as well just make it public. And that's where platform data section comes from. First up, I'm gonna be touching on what the API catalog does. A couple weeks ago, and this couldn't have been better, he was not aware this was happening. Yoav Weiss, a developer on the Blink team, he works for a CDN, who implemented a lot of the responsive images stuff and did a great work in the responsive images community group, tweeted this out where he was saying, hey, internet, does anyone know if they have anything like KangX's ES6 compat table, but for browsers? And luckily enough, we had to build this very thing in order to understand what the true web world looked like in the landscape. So I'm gonna switch over to a demo here, and hopefully this works, because I didn't get to see it work or not. Woo, all right. Do you guys see it? Can we switch over to the, perfect. Awesome, so this is the new page, I kinda already showed that. But when we start off on this page, you see this wonderful visualization. And one thing I really wanna point out, the difference between this and a lot of stuff that we do internally that's different from a lot of external tools, is we're actually going to the source. We're not hoping that a web developer keeps the data set up to date. We're actually going to the specifications through SpecRefDB, which is something that we help sponsor and some wonderful community people keep up to date, and we scrape those IDLs. So when you're looking at this landscape, it is the true landscape. It is basically the end all. It's what everybody supports. We additionally fixed up the type systems in each browser if their prototype chain was incorrect. So, but I wanna give props to Blink. Thank you so much, and Blink43 for fixing that, yeah. WebKit, come on. Anyways, but this is really great because it gives you, as you saw earlier, Jacob, show the circles start to come together, and that's what we wanna see. They'll never ever be one on top of another because hopefully the web platform continues to move. We all are coming up and experimenting with new things. New specifications are coming out to enrich your platform to create better experiences for your end users. And so you can switch these off quickly and see them overlap. One that I actually love to look at is, I don't know if you guys are aware of this, but Blink forked from WebKit. And so I always love to, I actually love to go take a look at that. So here's Google, and then you overlap Apple Safari. And if I mouse over top of this, these are interactive regions, you see 4,513 APIs. That's your interoperable section between those browsers, at least hopefully interoperable. And then if we take Apple Safari out, we put Microsoft Edge back in, there's 5,681 APIs intersection between Edge and Safari. There is more of an interoperable API segment that you can go after between Chrome and Edge than there is between the browser that they forked from. Down below, we have this wonderful table layout. I don't know if you guys can read that, but it's got all the wonderful numbers in there. So if you want to just see it in tabular form, you can scroll through all the various intersections and what they would be. And I'm sure what you're thinking right now is, Greg, that looked great on a slide. I bet you it looked great in your reviews and stuff, but how did you make a decision based on this? And that's where we get really deep here. By the way, sorry about the, that's actually our bug, by the way, the layout team's bug, the placeholder being off. But anyways, so that's where this table, basically it shows every single specification that we're scraping, their interfaces, and the APIs that hang off of those interfaces in detail, including the constructors necessary to build that feature. So let's take that again, that scenario we had in mind of WebKit. And I'm going to show you what we used with this tool with Verbatim. Unfortunately, to make the mobile web work, we unfortunately had to not care whether it was in a standard or not. So we went and we said, let me see if I can click here. It's implemented in Chrome, and it's implemented in Safari, and that's how we know it's core interop there in the mobile world. And then we want to ensure that it's not implemented in our browser. And even with all of the fixes, I can't mouse down here, guys. We want to ensure it's, oh, I clicked implemented, not implemented. And you'll see even with this, and we'll focus in on CSS because that's my world. There is still a ton out there that exists in these two browsers that does not exist in our browser. So this would be a launching off point. We would go cross-check with, luckily, the bug database that is now public. We would see how many bugs are open against them, how many live sites potentially use this information, and how bad the functionality issues is if we don't support these APIs. Additionally, if you're a big spec nut, you can even go in there and just, you know what spec it exists in, and you can look at Beacon and see whether or not it's status, whether or not it's supported. Obviously, there's no WebKit in there. Whether or not it's supported. And you can see Safari and Edge do have the necessary initial constructors in order to build up this interface, but we don't support the Send Beacon API, so technically it's not supported. Now, this is a lot of data to digest and understand, and we understand not everybody reads the specifications and knows where this information sits. And so that's where it's great, where we go back to status. Where is that at? If we go back to status, and let's say you heard about this awesome new feature called Beacon. Sweet, it's in development in Edge, that's awesome, so props to the team doing that. And then you can just see that we've added a new link down here that just says see detailed browser support. This allows you to not only see what is or isn't in a browser, if it's not supported, that means it's either behind a flag, it's prefixed, so you can't use it in production today is basically what this is telling you. Additionally, it lets you know which aspects are actually missing because so often we see people go to these benchmark sites and say, oh yeah, this is supported, and then we go to like work on bugs and we realize actually they don't support like three or four of the APIs, but the all up they get support for. This lets you know what they truly do and don't support against the actual specification. So we're really excited about what that will provide the community in knowing what is and isn't truly supported in the browser. Another thing, if I switch back to slides here. So to summarize the API catalog, basically it scrapes current specifications. I went over that. It iterates over each browser's type system in order to ensure that the the information it's providing is correct. Another great thing that we've learned in building these tools is you find a bunch of bugs. And some of the stuff we actually have just left in there because we need to fix them, and that will address the data. We want the data to be real. We want this to be the end result for people to find out what is and isn't supported. It also shows the proprietary APIs. Again, we want to know the entire landscape. We don't want to know necessarily the landscape that is ideal, although we truly do want everything standardized, and we've worked hard in relation with the standards bodies to try to get the stuff that we've implemented back into the standards communities where it makes sense. Some of these proprietary APIs, honestly, some of the Apple folks will even tell you they don't necessarily want standardized. So moving on, the future for API catalog. One thing I really want to stress is that this is the first rollout. We plan to continue to evolve these. We plan to add more specifications from SpecRefDB so that there's even more information there. We want to incorporate usage data that we get directly from the browser where it makes sense, and it does it so in a meaningful way. We want additional data for the workers and shared workers. There's an addition, different context there, so we need to build that out and make that work. We also want the ability, you saw Jacob Rozzi's cool slide from earlier, we want to be able to see that historical browser data so you can help keep us accountable and ensure that all browser vendors, not one, not the other, because the great thing about Interop is it takes all of us. All of us. In order for our end users' sites to work, it relies on the web developers writing standards-compliant code. It requires browser vendors to work together on finding the most interoperable solutions to either bugs or new features. It is a community effort. And so that's why I'm thrilled that this data is going public. API usage. We'll move over to this one. Again, if we take priority into account, there's multiple variables that we take into account here. And while we've got this wonderful jumping off point of what APIs exist, all of them are not equal. And so that's where API usage comes in. A couple months back, we were actually talking about taking this public, and so we ran a poll. Jen Simmons is a wonderful designer advocate at Mozilla. And so we asked, what would people want to see from usage on the web? And her tweet basically sums up, actually, my opinion, is, what they're using is irrelevant, actually, because it doesn't influence my design. But I would love to know adoptions of new specifications. And so that's where API usage comes in. If we can switch back over to the demo here. All right, cool. As you can see, we have a basic sorting of the CSS properties. And we utilized the Bing crawler from Microsoft Edge, and we actually built a brand new crawler that we're terming the Interop crawler. CSS is a very interesting language, and you probably know this, that if the browser doesn't support it, it fails gracefully. So this makes it very hard for us to see what was actually used on the web unless we actually support it. So we built an Interop crawler because we want to run everybody else's engine to see what they're seeing along with what we're seeing. Another big difference with this is a lot of it, it's very interesting if you start looking at some of the standard space, there's so many decisions based on static analysis. Just basically asking GitHub whether it's used HTTP archive, or I've even seen as small as determining selector information based on 50 sites crawled. Another fundamental issue that we found problems with when trying to make decisions is other telemetry sources at times do this at parse time. And while they get the scale, unfortunately, if you have a CSS library as popular as Bootstrap, if they add a single property to that CSS file, all of a sudden, those numbers are inflated, even if the web developer didn't actually utilize this. So all of this ensures that it was actually used on the page, as well as helps us make better decisions. So let's act like we now have our WebKit list from the API catalog that we need to do further investigations on. So we can just type in WebKit here. And just like that, I instantly have a rough prioritization of what I should be going after. If there's any other browser vendors, and I think I know of at least one, going after the WebKit prefixes, there you go. So, but that doesn't tell the whole story. And so if you drill into WebKit appearance, it's actually a remarkably large feature set and has a ton of values. And you'll quickly see here, sorry, I just scrolled over this and acted like you guys have seen this a billion times. But basically, you can see that we have the property usage trend over time. We have two crawls ready for public viewing, and you'll see that change over time and as we continue to make crawls. And then the top five values used trend over time. And then here's a breakdown of the values in general in in tabular form. And you can see we're getting data both from Chrome and from Microsoft Edge. And so you can see quickly that it probably doesn't make a ton of sense to pull some of your developers off of some of the feature work that they're doing to implement all of WebKit Appearance. It does for these top two, because there's a lot of usage there. And then one of the big things that we always want to take into account is, again, what are our users seeing? What websites are they going to? And that's where the traffic information comes into light. And you'll see right here, we also provide that. Here are the top domains using WebKit Appearance. And so you can imagine, if we're trying to get the most modern content, our UA string even has Chrome in the name, and so we're getting sites expecting support for WebKit Appearance, how all of these top sites are going to be broken on our browser, and unfortunately for our end users, if we don't support this. And so this is a huge feature that I love having in here. So let's go answer Jen's question. Again, unfortunately, I only have two crawls, but you'll see where we'll be able to get these answers. So many of the other telemetry tools out there just get the properties, and so that's really unfortunate, because we know display is used all over the web. That comes as no surprise. But when we're trying to determine whether or not we should go update grid, or hey, how important is this Flexbox bug versus this inline block bug, we then now gather all of the value information as I showed in WebKit Appearance. So we can now see Flexbox usage. As a former web developer, one of my favorite things in making decisions as a web developer was I want to know that the community is there to have my back. So when I was making a technological decision that I knew would hang around for a while, I want to know that there's going to be documentation, that there's going to be tutorials, that there's going to be, let's face it, Stack Overflow answers to my questions. And by looking at this, I can infer if there's this many sites, 3.2% of the web is now using Flexbox, I can pretty much infer that from that. It's not a guarantee, but there's decent interop there, as well as there's going to be a decent community around Flexbox that potentially can answer any of the questions that I hit with the pitfalls. And my number one favorite thing in layout for this is, as you saw all of those inputs into our prioritization, almost all of them are reactive. They're expecting a user to file a bug. They're expecting you to tweet at us. They're expecting you to go to user voice and upvote. And while that's great and I love it and I definitely want to hear from you, what about the one user that hit the site and left, wasn't aware it was broken? So I'm actually going to give some props to the Chrome guys back there and show you one that I actually really want to implement. Our layout lead is actually the spec editor of this, one of the spec editors, but shape outside. In my bug database, which you guys now have access to, you guys can go search this yourselves, there's not a single bug on shape outside. So by old metrics, this is super low priority, super low. But Chrome is seeing some sites. And so I'm looking at the values. Yep, they're actually using it for what it's intended. It's not just like a, just a reset. And then I start looking at the URL list. Wow, those are much higher than I was expecting. Much higher. And we crawl a very curated set of lists to ensure that we're getting both the long tail, subpages, as well as top-level domains. And so since I can ensure this is actually used, let's just go to the Shell Brothers real quick. See what it looks like in Edge. Again, we don't support this. So I scroll down, because this is the page where it was seen. And you know what? That looks like an area I would consider wrapping text. If you don't know what Shapes does, it allows you to wrap the flow of the text around a shape. And so if we open the same site in Chrome, I expect that we will probably see wrapping text, and sure enough. So this allows us to go from, hey, we have no bugs, this must not be important, to, I can show you bugs before it's too late. Because right now they're failing gracefully. They're working as intended, the end user is getting a great experience in any browser, the Chrome one is getting an enriched experience, until it's too late and the site is broken because they've done something in a way that doesn't fail gracefully. So to switch over to the slides. To summarize this, it asks the common questions. What is being used? How is it being used? Who is using it? And in what proportion? And then also, since you can ensure it's actually being used, you can go to the site and say, if we don't support it, how bad is that break? Because looking at shapes, those breaks aren't that bad. But again, it's at least now on our radar. It ensures it's used by the browser. I've covered that many times. It gathers value information. We generalize all these down. So if it's an integer, we make it a type of int. If it's a float, it's a type of float. This is great in standards discussions because we're often saying, well, how is it used? And so we go, we search GitHub or something and say, oh, this must be how they're using it. This is already gathering that information, generalizing it, as well as ensuring you that it actually was used on that page. It's device agnostic. As Clarice showed you earlier, we have a ton of form factors to take into account. So we go into every single media query as though that is the device we're running on. So this is not desktop only. And then it ensures that it would be used there as well. The future for API usage. Unfortunately, we have a lot more data that we weren't able to get public on the site in time. But this is actually a good example of what a standards body was making a decision on based on crawling 50 sites. And we generalize every selector that triggers a property on every single site. This is information we already have, so you can see the selector that they used on the left and the generalized on the right. This allows you, other browser vendors, to potentially optimize based on the most used selectors. Additionally, it helps us inform us when we're making CSS working group decisions. This helped, actually, we were in crunch time to ship Microsoft Edge, the November release, and I had a developer that we had two bugs, both technically the same priority, and he asked for this. He said, I want to know how often is padding increased when you hover a T-body element? And that made the determination of whether or not we fixed that bug or the other. So this is very powerful for any browser that's out there. This was kind of a prototype, but we want to do this, and this is why we're making this public. We want your feedback on which libraries you want us to follow. Because so often we get, hey, this library is really important. How do you know? Because it's included on a bunch of sites? Were they actually being used by the authors? Just because WordPress injects it all over the place doesn't mean it was actually used on that site. So we went ahead and went to GitHub, and we grabbed the top four based on forks. We gave them fingerprints. Basically, this is what the CSS looks like and will always look like this, and so we can find the patterns and say, was this used? This selector looks like this. As you guys know, Bootstrap has a lot of those grid-this patterns. And so we looked for those fingerprints, and sure enough, not surprisingly, Bootstrap is used on 123 out of every 1,000 sites. And that is massive, because you can start looking into sites and saying, hey, is Bootstrap having a performance issue on us? Maybe we could just go do a PR on them and fix the performance issue rather than spending 3 or 4 dev days trying to fix it right within the browser, and the users will see the benefit instantly. We want to provide more information from the pipeline, where we're focused really heavily on accessibility, and we really, really want to be able to provide the ARIA attribute values that are being used. Semantic tag usage, web component usage as it goes up, DOM event usage, and again, trying to tie this in a way that you get a full breadth and picture of what is happening on the web. At rule usage, properties used within those at rules, usage of the at rules just in general. We actually already have this data as well, wasn't able to get it up on the site in time. But better animation information. Unfortunately, animations are all over the place, and yet there's very little tooling to let you know what's in use and what to optimize around. And by providing what is used within keyframes, we'll be able to understand how most animations are built and thus do optimizations around that. And this one, I'm really looking at the other vendors here. I want the other two browsers. I truly do. There are caveats for both of them on why we can't necessarily run them at this time, but I do want their data because, again, we want a holistic approach. There are multiple times that we're in standards discussions and somebody references a Mozilla prefix that would be great for standardization. It would be great to see how that's used in the wild and actually whether or not it's actually utilized by the browser. And for the web developers out there, other browser vendors, I am stoked to say that today we are open sourcing the script that we actually crawl with, because while we know what we're looking for, we need your help to understand what you're looking for. What would make this tool great? Utilize our pipeline that has the capability of aggregating terabytes per crawl and our capability of our various crawlers to go get information about the web you're looking for. We plan currently, and feel free to open an issue on this if you want, we're planning currently to run it once per quarter. If you want it increased and you have a valid reason, we're really wanting to help out the community here. So please, go take a look at it. You can even download it and run it on your own site and see what your site produces. Any suggestions you have here, we're super excited to have your input and help make this a tool that makes ultimately the entire web platform better, because interop is not one browser's job, it's the entire community's. That's it, thank you so much.